For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. I am Aaron Broughton, your host for today, and thank you for tuning into the program. Today, we will continue our journey along the coastal line of Israel, beginning on the northern side. Nahariya is right next to the border with Lebanon. Here is Rosh HaNikra, where the whitewashed cliffs form a majestic sight along the Mediterranean Sea. And here, a cable car can take you to the limestone grottos that you see there below. Heading south, we come to the city of Akko. The city of Akko is one of the oldest continuous inhabited cities in the world, dating back to the time of Pharaoh Thutmose III. Well, today it has its own special charm and mystique, with an Ottoman citadel dominating the city skyline. Now, years earlier, the Crusader Knights used Akko as a base in their operations for their conquest of the Holy Land. Akko has switched hands several times over the years, from the Greeks to the Arabs, the Crusaders, the Mamluks, the Ottomans, finally settling into the Israeli city, today made up of a population of around 40,000 people, both of Arabs and Jews. We continue south now to Israel's third largest city, called Haifa. Now, Haifa is the major seaport in Israel. It is also home to the Baha'i faith. Located on Mount Carmel, the Baha'i temple looks over the city with its golden dome and beautiful gardens. At the base of these gardens is the charming German colony that was established in 1868 by the German Templars. It really is a unique place to see. As we make our way further south along the seacoast, we come to Caesarea. This ancient city was built by Herod the Great. Among the archaeological discoveries was found here an aqueduct that brought water into the city, and also an amphitheater that is still used today for various concerts. And then you'll see a hippodrome not too far from here, where chariot races and other games, even gladiatorial games, were played. Another fascinating find here was an ancient seaport that was also built by Herod. In fact, in building this, he found a way to solidify concrete underwater in order to make this port. Perhaps the most important place here is the palace, where, remember, the Apostle Paul stood before Herod Agrippa, and here also appealed unto Caesar to Festus and Felix. It was then from here that Paul was sent to Rome. Just standing on the spot gives us encouragement to stand for the Lord as we remember Paul's testimony of faith. Let's now travel to Netanya, which is a beautiful city that has a resort-like atmosphere with its pleasant beaches. It is also home to the Wingate Institute, where different Israeli athletes train for the Olympic Games. Further south, we come now to Herzliya, named after the father of Zionism, Theodor Herzl. You can actually see his silhouette on the water tower as you pass through town. Herzliya is also home to many wealthy families who are prominent in Israel. Also, several international ambassadors reside here, including our very own U.S. ambassador to Israel. Now, we come to Tel Aviv-Jaffa metro area, which is home to over 3 million residents. This is the city that never sleeps. There is a saying that helps us understand the culture in Israel that goes like this: Jerusalem prays, Tel Aviv plays, and Haifa pays. Tel Aviv is a business center, home to the Israeli Stock Exchange and also Dime Exchange. The beaches, nightlife, and a sprawling shopping atmosphere gives life to this new city in Israel. Why do I call that? Because Tel Aviv was really founded in 1909, as compared to its annexed neighbor, Jaffa. Now, Jaffa is over 4,000 years old and is on the biblical site of Jaffa where Jonah fled from God. It is a charming place today and is a must-see place to visit. Continuing south, we come to the modern cities of Ashdod and Ashkelon, which bear the names of the old Philistine cities that Samson and David knew. Today, these cities are made up of many immigrants from the former Soviet Union, as well as from Ethiopia and Morocco. Religiously, there is also a strong Orthodox Jewish neighborhood here as well. Truly, the coastal area is a beautiful and fascinating place. It's a favorite of mine to visit, as well as for many others who come to the Holy Land. Now, from ancient history to current people, and even the future events, there is something to learn and appreciate here at every turn. Well, I invite you to return to our program as we will next drive towards the hills of Hebron in the land of Israel. The next stop, we will come to Marashah, where the Edomite capital stood. Come along with us, invite a friend as well. Also, I just wanted to mention that IBJM is hosting a special tour to Israel, March 10th through the 21st, 2014. Contact us at 423-876-8150 or go to ibjm.org for more information. Now, with this in mind, let's open our Bibles as we study together with our teacher, Jewish believer Mark Oshman.
Thank you for listening to our radio Bible studies. In this session, we will briefly examine the books of Nahum and Habakkuk in the Old Testament. The Hebrew name Nahum has linguistic similarities to the Hebrew name Noah. The name literally means one who consoles or one who gives comfort. Nothing is known about the writer Nahum except that he came from the town of Elkosh. The primary theme of Nahum's prophecy was the judgment of Nineveh. The Hebrew word translated as burden, with reference to Nahum's message, can denote a prophetic utterance or a prophetic oracle. The prophet opened his work with a ringing affirmation about God. Quote, God is jealous, and the Lord revengeth. The Lord revengeth and is furious. The Lord will take vengeance on his adversaries, and he reserveth wrath for his enemies. Unquote. Each statement in that verse built upon the phrase that preceded it. With these words, Nahum introduced the subject of his brief prophecy. The holiness of God mandated that he execute judgment on evildoers. He grew angry slowly, but possessed great power. He exercised control over the forces of nature. Therefore, Nahum rhetorically asked, quote, who can stand before his indignation, and who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? Unquote. The prophet set up a contrast between the destinies of those who loved God and those who hated him. Those who trust in God, God was good to them. God will serve as a bastion during troublous times for such people. As for God's enemies, though, he will sweep them away. The end of the first chapter alluded to how God will deliver the Jews from their enemies. He promised to shatter the yoke that enslaved them. He exhorted them, quote, behold upon the mountain the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, unquote. The Jews can again perform their religious obligations, because God will cut off their adversaries. The initial verses of chapter 2 portrayed a battleground scene. The defenders were to, quote, keep the munition, watch the way, make thy lawns strong, fortify thy power mightily, unquote. The encounter will be tumultuous, as Nahum's language implied. Quote, the chariots shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broad ways. They shall seem like torches. They shall run like lightnings, unquote. The prophet employed a number of figures of speech to enliven his narrative. He described the bloody nature of the combat as follows, quote, the shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in scarlet, unquote. He compared Nineveh to a pool of water and described the Assyrians as young lions. Hazab, a name meaning literally that which is fixed, Hazab will go into captivity. Nahum might have used this name as an allusion to the northern kingdom of Israel. His description of this defeat, her maid shall lead her as with the voice of doves, tabering upon their breasts. Nahum's description of that defeat suggested that the woman of that area would take the lead in bewailing their nation's losses. Yet, Nineveh too would likewise suffer despoiling. God will make that city into a wasteland. He declared, quote, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will burn her chariots in the smoke. And the sword shall devour thy young lions, and I will cut off thy prey from the earth, and the voice of thy messenger shall no more be heard, unquote. God promised the woe against Nineveh, described as the bloody city. He will withstand the Assyrians. He will make them an object of ridicule. God compared the Assyrians to other pagan nations he had laid low. Egypt, Ethiopia, and Libya all fell to conquerors. Residents of the former kingdoms saw their children killed and their eminent men enslaved. In like manner, God said he would weaken the Assyrians. Their strongholds would collapse. Weakness will overcome their defenders. Fire and sword will devour them. They will have no hope of healing. News about the downfall of Nineveh will reach the ears of other nations, and they will remember the Assyrians' wickedness. Around the time that Babylon overthrew the kingdom of Judah, God raised up a prophet named Habakkuk. The Bible revealed no personal information about that prophet. According to Jewish tradition, Habakkuk was the son of the Shunammite woman who provided sustenance for the prophet Elisha, as recorded in the fourth chapter of 2 Kings. However, such an identification seems unlikely, the time differential between the two circumstances, the events in 2 Kings 4 and the writing of the book of Habakkuk. The time element would seem that this interpretation was unlikely. The book of Habakkuk presented a moral quandary. Why would God punish a sinful nation by means of an even more wicked nation? Habakkuk became perplexed when God told him about his plans for judging the kingdom of Judah by using the Babylonians to be his agents. Though the prophet seemed to remain puzzled, he did not allow this issue to weaken his faith in God. The book of Habakkuk contained one of the most profound statements found in the Old Testament. Quote, "The just shall live by his faith," unquote. In the New Testament epistles to the Romans and to the Galatians, the Apostle Paul cited this verse as a cornerstone of his defense for divine justification. The author of Hebrews did likewise in connection with Christian belief. Habakkuk complained to God about the moral lapses of his Jewish contemporaries. Quote, "Spoiling and violence are before me, and these are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth, for the wicked doth compass about the righteous. Therefore wrong judgment proceedeth," unquote. God's reply startled the prophet. God said he would call upon the Chaldeans, whom he referred to as that bitter and hasty nation. They would punish the Jews. They would perpetrate violence upon those in Judah and overrun their strongholds. Habakkuk attempted to reconcile this message with what he knew about the character of God. He wrote that God had, quote, "purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity," unquote. The prophet sought for a resolution to his dilemma. As a sentinel on a tower, he looked for information that might resolve his doubts. God directed him to record his vision so that others might understand this matter. God spoke of one who, quote, "transgresseth by wine. He is a proud man, neither keepeth at home," unquote. Such an individual, God declared, quote, "enlargeth his desire as hell, and is as death, and cannot be satisfied, but gathereth unto him all nations, and heapeth unto him all people," unquote. The perpetrator of such violence will receive in his turn violent treatment. Habakkuk concluded the second chapter by observing, quote, "The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him," unquote. The prophet thus implied that he had arrived at a resolution of his conflict. God had the right to deal with people in any way that he deemed fitting. The final chapter of the book contained Habakkuk's song of praise to God. Quote, "O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known. In wrath, remember mercy," unquote. God will execute his wrath against the tents of Cushan and the curtains of the land of Midian, as Habakkuk put it. The mountains will tremble. The sun and moon will stand still. God will thresh the heathen in his anger. Yet, God will deliver his people. Habakkuk closed by expressing his trust in God. Quote, "Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation," unquote. We've come to the end of another radio broadcast. Please come back and listen for future radio Bible studies about the books of the Old Testament.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.